I'm welcoming to the airwaves of WBEV Dr. Nicole Neidlinger. She is the Associate Medical Director of the UW's Organ and Tissue Donation Program. Dr. Neidlinger, thanks so much for joining us here in Beaver Dam this morning.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I think this is a really important subject, and we'll get to the nuts and bolts of that, but I thought it might be appropriate to just give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about the UW Organ and Tissue Donation Program, represent the UW, and give our listeners a little introduction about your program.
Sure. So, again, as you mentioned, my name is Nicole Neidlinger, and my background, my training is in surgery, so I did a fellowship in transplant surgery at University of Wisconsin in 2007, and it was during that time that I became pretty involved with our organ and tissue program. So it's here in Madison, and we're a nonprofit entity that's overseen by the government to regulate and manage all aspects of organ donation through most of the state of Wisconsin. So we're working with more than 100 acute care hospitals in Wisconsin. So if any of those hospitals have a potential tissue or organ donor, they would refer that person to our organization, and we would oversee that process in terms of the management of the donor and speak to the donor's next of kin and legal surrogates about the options for donation, allocating the organs, and having and recovering them, and so on. So it's really been pretty rewarding. I think it's a really mission-driven group. It's exciting to be here and be able to talk about it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So you're with the UW, but here in the state of Wisconsin, a pretty cooperative statewide system working together. Is that true?
That is true, yes. So we have a sort of sister organization that's in Milwaukee area, which is called Versity, and they're overseeing organ and tissue donation in the southeastern part of Wisconsin. Collaboratively, we do work well together, and I think we have a unifying mission. I mean, everybody doing this work is motivated mostly to save as many lives as we can and to end the wait list, which has about more than 100,000 people currently on it waiting for an organ in the United States.
How did you find yourself with the specialization in the medical field of doing transplants?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So in my surgery training, you get exposure to all different aspects of surgery. I had no idea, honestly, how much I would love transplant. I was a resident, and the first time on the rotation that we were able to experience the entire process. So I was able to go on an organ procurement and participate in the removing of the organs, the recovery from the person, and meet their family and hear what this meant to them, and then bring the organ back to the hospital and put it in another person and experience what it was like for that person who'd been, waiting for years for this gift. I was like, this is a miracle. You see a lot of amazing things in medicine, which I feel so fortunate to be able to do medicine. But when you see a kidney come from one body, go into a cooler, travel across the state, put it in another human being, and it turns pink in front of your eyes, like, honestly, literally, I still think that. I mean, hundreds of transplants later, when you're in the operating room and you see that, this is a miracle. I mean, it's really, I think, something that medicine has been able to achieve that is terrific for patients, and it's miraculous that it works and works so well, honestly.
My guest on Party Line this morning, Dr. Nicole Neidlinger, we're speaking about organ and tissue transplanting. Before we went on the air, I mentioned this to you. I was thinking about asking you later in the half hour, but since we're talking about how rewarding the specialization in medicine of transplanting can be, I bet it's also quite frustrating when you talk about a wait list of thousands of names.
Well, it definitely can be. So there's more than 100,000 people waiting in the U.S. on an organ. And for those people, there's just not a lot of other great options. I think about 80% of those people are waiting on a kidney. And there is the option of dialysis for those folks, but the option of dialysis is not a great one for the long term. People can do okay on dialysis for the short term, but it comes with a lot of complications and risks. It doesn't allow people to really travel or have a very good quality of life, because generally if they're on dialysis, three times a week, they're sitting in a chair hooked up to machines. So there's really not a lot of good options for people whose whose own organs have failed, and we do have a supply of potential organs from people who are willing to give them after their death, or even in some cases, there's an opportunity for living donations. So people who are still, are living and healthy can opt to give a segment of their liver or one of their kidneys to another person. I think, as you mentioned, the frustrating thing is seeing the patients, sort of in despair, hooked up to dialysis, waiting. And they do, I think the average waiting time for kidneys, is in the range of years still. So depending on blood type, it can be, 3, 5, 7 or more years. And during that time, people are sick and getting sicker. So they're really kind of in a desperate situation. And I guess the thing I see is potentially frustrating is I do think we have the opportunity to end suffering and disease on the wait list, but we just need more organ donors to say yes to the process. And it's super rewarding when you get to tell somebody that their wait has ended. I'll say that. When you get to call them in and, tell them that you think you have an organ that's going to work for them. So that part is really rewarding.
I want to, first of all, focus about people donating parts of their body after their death in this next question. We have a lot of healthy people out there in our WBEV listening area. Maybe they are not signed up to donate an organ after their death. What do they need to do? How do they start?
Well, I'd say most people sign up at the DMV. Certainly not everyone, but there's an opportunity to do that there when people are registering or renewing their license or ID card. But there's an opportunity also online, and the website that we mostly refer people to is heroicdeed.com. That will apply regardless of what state people live in, so they could go to that website, get more information there, regardless of their state, and it can put them on the National Registry for organ donation. So I think I would encourage people to look into it and also to talk to their family about it. It ends up sort of coming up at a time that no one ever expected, right? If somebody suffered something surprising that nobody ever anticipated, and then suddenly their family is being sort of faced with this situation that their person is in the intensive care unit and things don't look great, knowing ahead what their loved one's wishes was is very helpful for families and health providers also. So again, I think, for your listeners to consider it, heroicdeed.com is a great place to get more information and potentially sign up.
Let me take a moment now and also loop back to people who donate their organs while they are still living. I'm assuming, and I mean that seriously, I'm assuming this is mostly a family member giving a kidney to another family member or a close friend. That's a more personal interaction. Is that true?
I think interestingly enough, what you're describing is generally how it started and what most people believe, but it's actually probably not true. So we have a non-insignificant number of people who come to our hospital and they desperately want to do something altruistic and generous for people, and they donate a part of their body while they're still living in a non-directed way. So they don't have anybody named that they're sort of directing their kidney to. They just want to be generous and help out. So, for instance, for organ transplant, you need to be a blood type match. But people would be surprised at the way we're able to transplant, even when people are not a very specific tissue type match. There is opportunities for people to donate, even when their tissue type is not perfectly matched. As long as they're a blood type match, it's really possible. So we have, I would guess, at University of Wisconsin, we probably have, almost 100 living donors per year, kidneys and livers. And not a lot of those are giving directly to their loved one. I mean, quite a few of them are giving altruistically or as part of a match or a paired exchange where, say, if I wanted to donate a kidney to you, but we were incompatible, I could donate my kidney to somebody in, Tennessee or Florida, and then their donor could send a kidney back to you here in Madison. So there's really a lot of innovative and cool things that can happen for living donations in order to get people, as many people as possible, transplanted and to allow people, who are interested in and eager to give the opportunity to do that.
I'm not sure that altruistic is even a strong enough word to describe people who do that.
Yeah, I have a partner who wrote a book about this, and he sort of describes living donors as, you know, the 9/11 people running into a burning building, because they certainly, you know, they're taking on an operation that they don't need in order to help another person, which I agree with you. I think it's probably one of the most amazing things somebody could do. And I'm very grateful for the living donors that choose to do that.
Let's loop back now to people who sign their license or go online, as you indicated, and say, when I've passed on, I would like to donate my organs, my tissues for other people's benefit. What, do you have a sense of people's motivation for that?
I think this is a great question, and it's something I think about a lot, because I think it changes with current times and with cultural beliefs and across, you know, people's value systems. But I think there is a notion in our country, people are very committed to autonomy and to being able to make their own decisions in all ways. And I think for people, the ability to have that autonomy and decide what happens with their parts that can be used after death is important to people. And I also think that people who say yes, it still comes back to this notion of altruism and generosity. And people say, you know, I'm not going to need my organs anymore once I've died, and why not do something heroic for someone else? I still think that's probably the most common thing that we hear, which is terrific, of course, right? I mean, that people are still willing to treat each other that way, mm-hmm. even when, you know, sometimes we live in times that are tough. But that's the thing I hear the most. You know, sometimes we're talking to families whose loved one has already died, and families will tell us that the reason, you know, they're of course supportive is that their loved one had made statements earlier, like, if this were to happen to me, this is what I would want, and they want to support and honor that. So I think those are the main reasons that I hear, that people are willing to help other people after their death.
I'm speaking on Party Line this morning with Dr. Nicole Neidlinger. She is the Associate Medical Director at UW for their Organ and Tissue Donation Program. How about the, you had mentioned earlier, as far as signing up and speaking with family members. Are there occasions, if I have said that I want my organs to be donated, can my sons, after my death, undo that?
Good question. And the answer to that legally is no. So the law in Wisconsin, and it has been enacted in all the states, does say that if someone has decided when they're an adult, you have to be over 18 when you decide it. But if you've decided when you're an adult what you want to have happen with your organs after you die, it's a legal binding agreement and no one can overturn it. So it is sort of our moral and ethical obligation as a health system to honor that. As you may imagine, it can be challenging when people have not relayed that to their families, and then families at the end of life assume that it's a decision that they'll be able to make, and they learn subsequently that the decision has already been made. So I would just encourage people to, it's hard to talk about one's potential demise with your loved ones, because we don't like talking about those types of things. But I think it's important that people make their wishes known.
Let me reverse the question. I, for whatever reason, don't want to put my signature on anything, but I have told, let's say, my sons on a couple of occasions, I would like my organs donated after my death. Even if I have not spelled something out, can my children, after I have passed, say, yes, go ahead and harvest my dad's organs?
Definitely, definitely. So in Wisconsin, we have about 60% of the adults in Wisconsin have signed up on the donor registry. So for those 60%, the decision's already made. But for the remaining 40%, if something unexpected were to happen and they were to be in that situation in an ICU, there's a hierarchy of decision makers who would be asked in that situation that you know, your person is unable to speak for themselves because of what's happened, and they would be asked there to make the decision about organ and tissue donation, yes.
I need to take a brief break. Dr. Nicole Neidlinger is on the phone with me. This is our Party Line topic, organ and tissue donation. If you have a question that you'd like me to pose to the doctor, you can also text it to me right now at 920-887-9595. More with Dr. Neidlinger on the subject of organ and tissue donation after these words. On Party Line with me, Dr. Nicole Neidlinger. She is a surgeon in the transplant department at UW Health, organ and tissue transplants. The topic this morning on Party Line again, if you have a question you'd like me to pose to the doctor, 920-887-9595. Please text it to me right now. You mentioned that there are, 60% or so of Wisconsin residents who are signed up to donate their organs, their tissues. Is that correct? And then is that number going up, down? Any trends in that regard?
You're right. It's about 60%. It's stayed close to the same, but you know, maybe a couple of a percentage or 2 point decrease, but it's mostly stayed around the same since the inception of the donor registry, and which in Wisconsin was about 20 years ago. So that's about what we've seen, yes. And I think it varies by, ethnicity, culture, location, age, but that is, about what we see at 60%.
I hadn't thought of this question before, but you mentioned the fact that we have the ability to transplant organs is increasing. But in the medical field, aren't we also developing not automatic hearts, aren't we also developing different kinds of devices that would maybe preclude the need for organs? Or is which direction is it going? Do we need more organs or do we need less?
Good question. I think we still need more organs. And yes, you're right that research and science has, because of the organ shortage, has tried and is still trying to find alternate ways to get suitable organs, including xenotransplant, which is sort of a fancy word for utilizing organs across a species into humans that didn't originate from humans, so originate from primates or other animals. I think we're going to see that happen, but I'm not sure it's going to happen in my lifetime, honestly. I think we still have a ways to go with the science on it, but it's certainly improving. The best still treatment right now is, human-to-human transplant, and most of the opportunities there are from deceased donors and living donors. So I definitely think we still need more organs, I guess, to answer your question.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. Saying it was a good question since I asked it so clumsily, but you had a great answer, and I appreciate that. How about a general question? What about the misconceptions that people might have about being an organ donor? Are there a couple of common ones, a few that you'd like to maybe shoot down this morning here on WBEV?
I think that most people, what I hear is they think that maybe their organs will not be good for someone else. That's what I hear. People think that they are too old or they have medical problems, or sometimes I'll hear people say that their habits they think would exclude them. They'll worry that because they drink or smoke or something like that, they would be excluded and their organs would not be usable. I think people will be actually quite surprised. On TV, the average age of an organ donor is a teenager who is completely healthy and has suffered something, like a trauma acutely. But in actuality, the average age of an organ donor is probably in their 40s, and a huge number of people that have other medical problems. I mean, people with hepatitis, people who die of strokes, people with diabetes. We've had organ donors that were up to 90 years old. We've had organ donors that were newborn infants. So I think people may not realize, because it looks different on TV, what an actual organ donor looks like. So I guess one thing I would tell people is to not rule yourself out. You may be surprised that your person can still save the life of another, even if they're, a little older. Another thing that I hear, and this is interesting, when I first moved here and I went to the DMV window, the person at the window asked me about the organ donation question, not knowing what my job was. And I said, I was like, so tell me when you're at the window, what is the most common thing that you hear from people? And this person said something that I also hear, which is that people cited that they worry if they sign up on the donor registry that not everything will be done to save them, that somehow this will be known early in their hospital stay and they won't be treated.
Oh.
And I think that's another misconception that I would refute. So, you know, when someone comes into the emergency department, they have no idea whether they're on the donor registry. Those calls happen later, only once somebody's been treated and stabilized and perhaps referred to our organization. We have access to that list and to see who's on the registry, but it never impacts people's treatment decisions.
Dr. Neidlinger on the phone with me, and we have a couple of other things that we had agreed to get to, but I have some questions. Is a donor charged for the donation?
No, they are not charged the donation. So the cost, and there is a cost of working up someone for organ donation, because there's quite a few tests we have to do. It involves travel and flights. There are teams that will, you know, fly from different cities to come recover the organs. There's certainly costs involved, but those costs are passed away from the donor's family to our organization, to the organ and tissue program, as the government is able to oversee and allocate those costs into the recipient insurance bucket, ultimately, so that the donor does not receive any higher costs, or their family does not.
This is going to be a little bit longer. Somebody wrote saying that his or her brother passed away a couple of years ago from a stroke. Received a call, lots of questions about my brother. When they got to the question about whether my brother was gay or not, and I said he is, but I said, I know he's been tested negative for HIV. He's always been very healthy. According to this person who's texting me, she shut me down immediately and said that she had no further questions and that he couldn't donate any organs, even though he had on the driver's license that he wanted to donate. Does this ring true in any way? Any comment about that, doctor?
I mean, first of all, I just want to, whoever sent that in, I'm sorry that that happened, because I don't understand it. So HIV, it sounds like the person was not HIV positive anyway, but HIV was an exclusion for organ donation till about 10 years ago, and now it is not. So now even donors with HIV can give their organs to other people. We only put those organs in other people that already are living with HIV. So it's not an exclusion. And it's also not, someone's sexuality is not an exclusion for organ donation. And I don't know if this was long enough ago that perhaps it was before that time, but certainly now it is not an exclusion.
Okay. There are a couple of minutes left this morning, and both you and I wanted to get to just maybe a story or two, some heartwarming story from your career in the field of transplant, maybe a heartbreaking story, a couple of vignettes if you could share with our listeners.
Oh gosh, there's so many. I mean, I often tell people that how I got into this work is I think most physicians and most people know that organ donation is a great thing for recipients, and that organ donation, you know, saves the lives of recipients. But I don't think that they know necessarily that it's a great thing for families of donors. And I learned that when I was a fellow. So one of the things that was required of us as trainees in the transplant program is that we would fly to the different hospitals in Wisconsin to recover the organs. And one of the things that was asked of us was to speak to the families of the decedent, and let them, you know, thank them for their gift and let them know how much this meant to us. And overwhelmingly, when I met these families, they were saying to me, you know, overwhelmingly, it was like, thank you for allowing our loved one to have a legacy, to allow us for the opportunity for generosity, allow, you know, something good to happen in this tragedy. And I don't think I quite realized how much it means for families also. You know, we're able to honor organ donor families every year. The governor of Wisconsin, regardless of party, always does this in a nonpartisan way. And I really appreciate that all of the families who've been donors in Wisconsin in the last year are welcomed at the governor's mansion. And it's a lovely ceremony where people are thanked and their gift is recognized. and people come from all over the state, and it's lovely to see them and like what this had meant to them.
It's almost
it's
almost a way for their loved one to live on.
Exactly, yes. And that's what I think I learned doing this work that I didn't necessarily know before. I didn't realize that it mattered so much for families of donors.
Okay.
So that's one thing I would say, yes.
I need to wrap up, but I want to make sure we don't end our Party Line visit with Dr. Nicole Neidlinger without you having an opportunity to once again give our listeners a place to go if they're motivated by our conversation this morning to find out more or to actually sign up as a donor.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun to be on the air. I think that I would say to people in Wisconsin are incredibly generous, and I appreciate that. And the work, I understand as a surgeon, the work that I do wouldn't be possible at all without organ donors, whether living or deceased. So I'm sure you have quite a few people on the air that are donor families or were donors themselves. So first I would say to them, thank you. And then for those who are undecided, I think you can get more information at heroicdeed.com and consider signing up on the registry. It does make a huge difference for patients. It doesn't matter if you are in great health or not. It doesn't matter, you know, your age or your, you know, what other processes you may have going on. I would say don't rule yourself out as a donor, and let your family know what you have thought about or decided. It's a hard conversation to do, but I think an important one.